So I thought it would be useful to run through two more examples of graphing. So here I have some simulated experimental data. So you see we put in as a number from 1 to 40, and we run our simulation and we get some number out. You see it roughly falls off as you go from 1 to 40 is the input. I haven't given any titles to anything. This is all just simulated data. And this picture you've got here is probably the best way to display this data. So it's not ideal yet. You might say, well, these blobs are not great. We should have little crosses. You might say, well, yes, we definitely should have titles on the axes, title to the chart. But this looks very clean and very nice. But what can go wrong is you might be tempted to display this in other ways, because this looks very roughly like data that's flowing downhill. You're changing 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and you're getting numbers that sort of decrease. And so it's actually very tempting to display this as a line chart instead. So let's display this as a line chart. So there's a line chart. And now you see, well, there's some sort of trend in this data. And this would be completely inappropriate for this data, because this data is samples taken at particular points, and connecting them with lines is bad. Even drawing the data points and connecting them with lines, it's not quite right. These are specific points. And let me show you what goes wrong. So imagine that there's rather more noise in the system. So I actually can add more noise to the system. And suddenly, you're now seeing sorts of trends in the data. The lines are now starting to dominate the points. In fact, if we put enough noise into the system, it all looks chaotic. Whereas if you go back to just looking at the scatter plot, the lines added something to it that actually isn't there. There isn't actually those trends in the data. This is just general chaos. Whereas if we drop down the error, that's not chaos. That's now rather a nice data point with very tiny little wiggle. So what I had originally was this. So if you have something like this, you might be tempted to connect them with lines. But something like this, actually, what you really want is the data points and then a trend line. Now, can Excel be clever enough to put a trend line in? Oh, it can. Let's put in an exponential trend line. Yes, I know what it is. Let's get rid of that. So you now see it's calculated the trend line exponentially, and you see that actually, apart from right at the end, this does fit that exponential trend line. We could add a linear trend line instead. So you've now got two trend lines. You can see which one fits this particular data better. So it's actually a trend line that you'd really want rather than the line connecting the points. And then the reader can just judge how well does your fit match things. In this case, it doesn't fit particularly well at the end. Now, if I get rid of that. Okay, so that's one of the pieces of advice from the book, is don't connect your data points with lines. Actually, plot one thing against another. So then somebody comes along and says, well, actually, I was taught that because this is discrete data, I should do a histogram. So here's a histogram. And it could be argued that's an appropriate format for this data, but in fact, this conveys less information because you are blinded by the heights of these graphs, of these lines, rather than by the actual positions. So you can produce a beautiful graph that actually doesn't communicate the idea from your head to your reader's head. So this is probably the best one. Now, of course, what then happens? Somebody comes along and says, I've got two lots of data to plot. So I'm now plotting one lot of data against another. So now what we've got is I've got an input data and an output data. And you can actually see that there's a trend. In fact, if we are super clever, we can work out the trend line. It's a nice straight line trend line, as it jolly well should be, given how I generated this data. And it would be complete. And this is a lovely way to display one variable against another. It's a standard scientific way. But say you'd just gone into Excel and said, oh, I need a graph, I've got these two lots of data, I'll display it as a histogram, one of these things, and it has gone and let's just completely start from the beginning again. There's the data, insert a column graph. This is one of the problems I told you about with Excel, that it goes and makes inspired guesses as to what you really meant. This is what happens if you take the two lots of data and you plot them. So you're not plotting the one against the other, you're now just plotting them next to each other. This is completely meaningless. This is just completely impossible to interpret. You may really have meant something more like this, where I've now got lines which we said were bad before. Now they're showing which bits of data are connected to which, and is that better or worse than doing it without the lines? Well, which is better, which is worse? Showing the data points or showing the lines connecting them so you can see which is connected to which? It depends what ideas you're trying to communicate from your head to the other person's head. Okay, so that's a little bit about, unfortunately, whatever rules you may read in these things, it really does depend on what communicates the ideas best to the viewer, to the reader. Now, hopefully Peter Robinson talked to you a little bit about aggregating data and investigating data. So what I've got here is 50 data points down the side here that have been generated by random number generator, and then I've put them into a histogram. So I'm now aggregating the data. So numbers 6 and 7 go into this bar, and there's 4 of those. Numbers 8 and 9, there's 8 of those. And you can see that we're aggregating this up. And you look at this and you say, when you're exploring the data, you've now binned these into separate bins because there's too much data to look at on its own. And you might say, well, something very interesting is happening at 16 and 17 because there's a gap there. Of course, it may be a random process, and there is no real gap there. It just happens to be the sample you took. So you might want to say, well, what happens if instead of putting them into bins that are too wide, I put them into bins that are 3 wide? So I'm now aggregating 3 to 5, 6 to 8, 9 to 11. And now that gap's vanished. There's a peak at 18 to 20, so it now looks like this is bimodal data. There's 2 peaks in this data. And if you just do the graph once and explore the data by just drawing one graph, you might find yourself getting into that sort of error. Now I'm putting them to bins of 4. So you see the bins are now 8 to 11, 12 to 15. The peak's completely vanished. So put them in bins of 3. There's a peak, 18 to 20. Put them into groups of 4. There is no peak. So what's happened is 18, 19, and 20 must have a distribution such that they happen to be, by the way they were binned, they happen to capture quite a lot of the data. If you go to 5, you see it now looks very, very vaguely normal. Now, 50 is actually quite a small sample, so I can go and increase the number of samples to, I have prepared this, I have 250 samples. And now with 250 samples, putting them into those bins, suddenly it looks normal. We're just binning it in groups of 2. And I'm hoping, I haven't tried this, that in groups of 3 looks vaguely normal. Groups of 4 is vaguely normal. Groups of 5, still vaguely normal. So when you're doing experiments, so you're doing runs on image processing or network capacity or on human beings, if you take too few samples, you get skews, and then you can overanalyze it. So you do always need to make sure you take enough samples, and that when you look at the data, if you see weirdnesses, you check that those weirdnesses aren't just because of the samples you took.